Welcome to Design Downtime, the podcast where we celebrate the joys of living a balanced creative life. I'm your host, Guy Siegel, a design director in Toronto, Canada, and I invite you to join me on this journey as we redefine what it means to be a successful design professional. Let's break free from the shackles of hustle culture and embrace the full spectrum of human experience, because life is too precious to be spent only in pursuit of productivity. Today, I'm excited to be talking with Mordecai Hammer. Originally from Los Angeles, Mordecai graduated from Santa Monica College with a bachelor's in interaction design. After a stint as a motion graphics designer in the entertainment industry, he discovered his true passion, design systems. As a child of deaf adults and a former sighted guide, his work is rooted in a drive for inclusive, accessible design that works for all. In his current role as a product designer on the design systems team at Lyft, he's grateful to be surrounded by people who share those values. He is also an avid teacher, running Figma workshops at California State University, Long Beach, as well as internally at Lyft. There's nothing that brings him more joy than sharing knowledge with his peers. In his spare time, Mordecai just finished taking a woodworking class, which was decidedly not his thing. You're equally likely to find him hosting his weekly trivia game or on a hike with his wife and pup. Mordecai, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here, Guy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And you're going to talk to us about improv.
Yeah, it's like a long time love, but a relatively recent practice for me. So I'm really loving it.
As you know, I love to dive into the origin story of where people got interested or got involved in their specific hobby. Where does improv come into the picture for you?
I was exposed to improv in a way that I think a lot of people were probably exposed to it from a television show in the 90s called Whose Line Is It Anyway? It's like a short form improv games that are kind of modified slightly for television. And short form, for those that don't know, it's like 3 to 5 minutes per scene, one suggestion from the audience that kind of proves that it's made up. And I loved Whose Line. I watched it all the time. I definitely did not understand at the time how amazingly cool it was to have like five utter masters of the medium just like showing up on my TV every night. But yeah, I mean, it was something that I watched a lot as a kid. And growing up in LA, I saw a few improv shows in person before I ever really even dreamt of performing. I went to Second City, actually, which I believe has a location by you in Toronto. And but again, like that was just kind of like purely for entertainment, if that makes sense. Like it wasn't something that I saw myself doing in those moments. The first time I imagine being like really floored by improv and kind of admiring it was at a performance of Improv Shakespeare. Is that something you've heard of?
I've seen the reduced Shakespeare, but I don't think I've seen the Improv Shakespeare.
I'm not familiar with the reduced Shakespeare, actually. What's that?
Reduced Shakespeare, I think I first saw it in London. It is an hour and a half. It's, I think, two or three guys, and essentially they cram all of Shakespeare's work into an hour and a half.
Wow. Oh, gosh.
It's, you know, it's edited, but it's great fun.
And it's comedy, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Improv Shakespeare is something similar to that in the sense that it's like a comedy Shakespeare performance, but it's long form improv. So it's they take one suggestion from the audience and then that drives like the opening scene, and then the performers just kind of take it wherever, you know, and that is very similarly, I'm sure, to the reduced Shakespeare. It's like all in the iambic pentameter. It's all like rhyming. And, you know, like you said, it's edited. It's probably anachronistic at times. Like they're making references to things that probably didn't exist at the time of Shakespeare, but that makes it more relatable and more funny usually. And yeah, I mean, I just remember that totally like blew my mind. Completely. I thought that it wasn't real. Like I thought that it couldn't have been made up in the moment. It was too funny, and also like it hit such dramatic highs and lows that it seemed impossible that even the arc of these stories was being made up on the spot.
you're watching Whose Line Is It Anyway? You saw Improv Shakespeare. Did you go once or did you go several times?
To Improv Shakespeare just once, but yeah, it's a regular show for sure.
By the way, did you watch any other comedy shows?
Yeah, I'd seen lots of stand-up and several other improv shows. Improv Shakespeare was one of the only long forms that I'd ever seen, and that was really eye-opening for me because like I said, Whose Line was kind of my blueprint for what improv looked like, and seeing long form was really impressive because you don't have the safety net of structure. Like in short form, there's lots of little games. So there's so many there's rules to every game. And so if you're at all feeling a little bit lost, you can kind of revert back to the rules of the game. Whereas long form is just completely unstructured. It is wherever you and whoever else is on stage take it, which is so, so impressive.
So you watched those. What's next for you? When did it become a something that you thought, you know what, I could be doing that?
So when I moved out from LA to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where I live now, a couple of years ago, I didn't know anybody. So I had to do something to kind of put myself out there. And that was one of the many ways that I chose to put myself out there was joining up the local improv troupe.
What are they called?
They're called the Idiot Box.
The Idiot Box.
Yeah, which I didn't know that term until they taught me it. But I guess it's like, kind of an old-timey word for the television.
Absolutely. Did they have classes?
Yeah, I started with an intro class, about 5 weeks. Learned a lot. Still learning a lot constantly. It's just like every single time I'm on stage, but even when I'm not on stage, just being in the class and hearing other people get notes, it's almost always applicable to some part of my own process as well.
You find this group, Idiot Box, you go to the first class. You have certain expectations that you bring with you. How has it met your expectations, or was it a complete shock?
I think that there are certain things that I expected to not be a problem that continue to come up as problems. They're just kind of a struggle for me personally, but I think also for a lot of people that are learning improv. One of them is you should avoid asking questions. In improv, there's kind of this idea of an offer, right? So when we're building a scene together, I make an assumption about who we are or where we are or what we're doing. And I say or do something with my body language that indicates where we are, who we are, what we're doing. And that is, it takes a little bit of bravery to do that, like to make a choice takes a little bit of bravery. And it's kind of an impulse. If you're not 100% sure what choice to make, you ask the other person in the scene what they're doing or who they are. And it's just kind of how we go through daily life is when we're not sure about something, we ask. But that's kind of one thing that improv has been teaching me is like, sometimes you just got to make a choice. Like any choice is fine. It doesn't need to be an amazing choice. It doesn't need to be a funny choice even necessarily. It just needs to be a choice. And then you can keep moving from there.
That sounds like it requires a lot of trust in the other person.
Yes. Absolutely. It requires so much trust, which is awesome to be meeting people and just like being put in a setting where they're trusting you and you're trusting them. And there's kind of that mutual expectation of trust is so affirming, I guess. It's a wholesome place, an improv studio.
What is the curriculum of improv?
So we are learning short form. So there's lots of little games there. That's, I think, before we got into playing any of the actual games, there was just building some of the more basic skills of what you'll need to do in order to be on stage. So for instance, at one point the teacher was like, okay, I'm just going to have you speak about a topic that someone from the audience has, or someone from the class in that case, has suggested. So like, construction materials. Now you have to speak for a minute and a half straight about construction materials. And that's kind of just building the ability to get past the, I don't know if it's shyness or just like a hesitance to really just speak your mind and go all the way with whatever you're thinking about. Outside of that, there's building characters. So in a similar way to making an offer to someone else in a scene, you got to make a choice about what the character that you're inhabiting is. So at that point, when we were just focused on building characters, there wasn't any game in particular. It was just, you're going to come up on stage with this other person, and you're both just going to assume the role of a very strong, and when I say strong, I mean like convicted, like you really have conviction within your character. They don't need to physically or emotionally be strong. I'm trying to think, what else in terms of introductory lessons? There was like scene work. So there's, I believe that's what it's called, is like where you're building an imaginary space, kind of like pantomiming. And there's it's surprise. That's another thing that I expected to be easier. And the moment that you start trying to pantomime, you realize that like, you don't know exactly how to do it as precisely as you think you do. I was just trying to, we were in a fire station and the goal was to enter the scene, interact with something, and then leave. I said, oh, can I enter? It's a fire station. Can I enter with the pole? And she said, that's fine. The teacher said, that's fine, but you're going to have to leave the same way. So I slide down the pole and then I had to climb up the pole, which that part was relatively easy. But then what do you do when you're at the top? You have to kind of like, you know, shimmy up, push your entire body up. And it was like this kind of, there was a moment where I realized that I didn't fully understand how to like make my body look heavy. Like I was pushing myself through a hole. I had never done it before.
Yeah, not something we tend to do on a daily basis, really.
No, but really fun. You know, that's kind of the overall thing that I love about improv, is that it's just like a place to play. And we don't really get very many settings where we can just play without judgment as adults.
How long did it take for you to feel like you know what you're doing?
I don't know if I ever will. But I think that, you know, after maybe 10 shows, you get like you start to see the patterns and you start to, there's less of your mental space that's being taken up with just taking in all of the information, and there's less that's new in the sense that the format is clear, and the things that are new are just whatever is being improvised at that moment.
Are there any shows with real audience?
Yes, there's a few nights. I mean, probably four nights a week. There's shows. There's one that's kind of interesting in the sense that it's they call it Remix. I've never taken part in this one, but there's a stand-up artist that gets up there and does their pre-written set. And then the improv artists have never heard it before, but then they improvise based on the set. It's kind of an interesting combination of both of those art forms. And there's a brunch show. I usually go to the brunch show. It's like kind of unusual to be watching improv at 11:30 on a Sunday, but it works surprisingly well.
So tell me about the first time you were on stage in front of your audience.
Yeah, terrifying. It helps that the lights are blinding because you can't see anyone's face, even if you're trying to. So that kind of eliminates that aspect of the nerves, I guess. And I mean, improv is generally low stakes. The highest stakes it gets is when you're in front of an audience. And even then, it's not that high, but it is as high as it has ever been or ever will be, right? And so you can definitely feel that in the moment. But again, it's like you're surrounded by people who support you and who want nothing more than to see you succeed. And that's kind of something that I realized during that my first performance. It's like there's performers, and then there's also the host, and the host is almost always at my studio is always the owner, and she has her own role to play, And she's kind of like the puppet master in a way. So she's not directly controlling any of us, but there's certain games where the host has more influence on the flow of the game than others. So there's like a freeze game where the host has to yell freeze at random points. The two people on stage will freeze and someone has to come and tag someone out and pick up a different scene based on that position of whoever they've assumed. And when the host yells freeze can give you a laugh, even if the scene you were just in wasn't particularly, like, it wasn't going very well or wasn't very funny, the audience is suddenly laughing. And so there's kind of an art to hosting as well. And yeah, it's just like everyone's got your back.
I'm curious to know, because when you're learning a certain skill, you can tell how good someone else is. You can say, okay, this I can definitely recognize this person as a beginner versus someone who's more versed in it or experienced in it. How do you tell that about someone else who's doing improv?
That's a really good question. There's a lot of different ways. There's so many different ways. Ultimately, I think it boils down to how comfortable they are in a scene. But there's a lot of different ways that can manifest. I said earlier that one of the most important things to determine when you're in a scene is like who, what, where. So how are we related, the people that are on stage? I mean, technically you can play strangers too, but it's a lot harder to play funny if you're strangers because there's kind of there's less dynamics to play with and you have to introduce yourself. Otherwise, it's kind of weird. Why haven't you introduced yourself to the stranger? There's just typically there's more material there if you have some sort of pre-existing relationship. And so the faster people establish those things, the more you can, and the more smoothly they establish those things, the more obvious it is that they're experienced. There's also kind of an aspect of, this isn't universally true, but if someone's very comfortable playing a heel character, like someone that's very unlikable, mean, if they're comfortable doing that, it indicates a level of confidence on stage. And you can tell when someone isn't comfortable, but is like they're feeling guilty or something as they're inhabiting this heel character. And that is like not funny. It's kind of a little bit, I don't know, the audience just like can tell. They're like, oh, you're not going to get the laughs and you're going to, it falls flat, I guess. So if someone's very comfortable playing a heel, that is another sign to me that like, oh, you've done this before.
I don't know if you have that memory, but I'm really interested to know what's your sort of the earliest laugh you remember getting.
Wow. Gosh, give me a sec. I have no idea. Let's see. Oh man, it's somewhere in there, but it's wild. I don't know. I'm not sure. The interesting thing about improv is that like in short form, there's a little bit more emphasis on being funny. In long form, the funniness is kind of incidental. Like if it happens, that's great, but it's not actually explicitly the goal. It's about taking the audience on a journey, a long form set, as far as I understand. I haven't really done very much long form, but in short form, generally you've got a minute and a half. So you want to make the audience have a good time in that minute and a half or 3 to 3 minutes. There's one particular game we play that I do generally struggle with because more so than any other, this type of game requires you to be funny. In other scenes, if you aren't being hilarious, like I said, there's the opportunity for your partner or the host or someone to kind of bail you out or support you in some way. But there's one format of game where everyone just lines up and says a joke. That's really the whole thing, is the one that comes to my mind is a last action joke. So if you've ever seen an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, he would often be fighting the bad guy near the end and lose his gun, but then pick up something random and then, kill him with a pencil and say, "Gah, you're full of lead," And so that's like one entire game is a few people get on stage and you have to come up with a pun based on a category suggested by the audience. And it you know, being in a scene with someone else where there's something to work off of, I have no problems with that. I have less problems with that, I'll say. And, but yeah, these where it's just like, come up with your best pun about cars. See, it's, yeah, it feels like being put on the spot. So that's a challenging one. And every time I get a laugh from one of those, oh, yeah, feels great.
Have you done long form?
Not yet. I think that's a goal for me for sure. Like I'm fascinated by the prospect of it. We don't do a ton of long form at my studio, but I'm sure I won't be at the studio forever. So I do plan on getting there at some point. It does seem like hard mode. So I fully anticipate needing to like really buckle down and get my skills sharpened before I get too into long form. But it's never too early to try, right? The only way to get better at something is by actually doing it. So I do need to start.
So we talked about how you're sort of able to assess how others are, you know, how well others are doing. How do you know you're getting better?
Yeah. Seeing the patterns, like being able to know, first of all, just off of the title of the game that'll be announced, like what to expect, how to kind of brace myself for the type of what will be demanded of me in that scene. There's also an aspect of improv that's like, who are you improvising with? So getting to know my counterparts on stage better and how they like to play a scene. When I'm able to anticipate what will let them get a laugh, then I know that I'm in a good, like I'm either having a great night or I'm getting better.
So improv is definitely about a lot of communication, a lot about listening to the other person that you play off. How do you see yourself, or has it affected the way you communicate with other people outside of the improv world?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, not only is there the kind of straightforward aspect that like improv is about playing. And so if you are playful more often, then it's going to be a more natural course of conversation. You won't be so straight-laced about your reply. Sometimes you might say something that is almost a non sequitur in response to what someone said, and for no other reason other than now we're laughing and then we can get to the actual answer. But on top of that, there's one of the core tenets of improv is to yes and whatever someone else is saying. And so if someone makes an offer, they say, we're at a pizza shop, then you say, yes, we're at a pizza shop and I'm the boss, right? Or, and I'm the delivery guy and I'm late. This kind of building on what people are saying is so helpful because it puts you in an optimistic point of view when you're having a conversation. And it's so much easier to be creative in that way, right? There's nothing that shuts down creativity more easily than kind of poo-pooing someone's idea. So it's, you're building the habit of affirming, which is so helpful.
Is your wife into improv as well?
She likes to watch it. She doesn't really perform. She was a theater kid growing up, just not improv, like musicals. And so I think that for her, performing is very much like something that she used to do and no longer does.
So do you still follow improv out there?
We have like a North Carolina improv festival. I haven't been to it yet, but I do plan to go this year. It's in, I think, May. So kind of soon. May or June. But yeah, I mean, that's the extent to which I have been involved with the improv community outside of my very local troupe. But it's something I really am looking forward to doing, just kind of seeing how one of the interesting things about improv that I haven't seen in my own life, but I've heard stories that like everyone does it a little differently. The same game has slightly different rules depending on where you're playing, or maybe there's an entirely new game that no one in your troupe has ever heard of. And you only get introduced to things like that by meeting other improvisers from other parts of the world.
I not only host a podcast, I also enjoy listening to podcasts. And I would say about 50% of the podcasts I listen to are somehow revolving around improv comedy. Do you listen to any of those?
Yeah, I love improv podcasts. They're so funny. I haven't listened to any super recently, but I railed through Bananas for Bonanza. Have you heard of that one?
Absolutely. Love Andy Daly.
Andy Daly's so funny. And that podcast is amazing. And then, you know, Comedy Bang Bang is like the classic. I think most people are aware of that one. And I've listened to my fair share of those. Like I said, I've actually, most of the improv related podcasts that I listen to nowadays are like improv theory as opposed to improv practice, I guess, improv in practice. And there's, if you're ever curious about that, there's a fantastic one called The Backline Podcast. That one is probably my favorite. It's actually run by two Canadian guys, and they're incredibly inspiring and very helpful teachers. What are your favorite improv podcasts?
Oh, definitely Comedy Bang Bang. Probably everything that Andy Daly, Paul F. Tompkins are involved with.
That man really knows how to do a voice. It's crazy. Yeah, I love him.
Mordecai, where can people find you?
Twitter. I still call it Twitter. I'm going to call it Twitter until it falls off the face of the earth. On Twitter, I'm _Mordecai. My website's mordecai.design. That's really about it for my internet presence.
Awesome. And people can come to Winston-Salem and watch you live.
That's true. At the Idiot Box in Greensboro, actually.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Awesome. Thanks, Guy.
This is all for this episode of Design Downtime. Thank you for joining me. And until next time, I hope you enjoy your downtime.